Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels, one of our local businesses who have totally been holding it down during the pandemic. Right now, they're open 7 days a week in both Arcata and Eureka. They've got fresh baked bagels, pastries, delicious coffee and espresso drinks. They offer outdoor seating at both locations now so you can stay distant and safe while still eating someplace other than your own house. Amazing. Check out Los Bagels, open 7 to 2 daily at 1061 I Street in Arcata and 403 2nd Street in Old Town Eureka.
Happy Humboldt, everyone. This is Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outposts. Yeah, I don't know. We were bored. We were like, pandemic is weird. We should do something different. We should, I don't know, let's start a podcast. No one has ever had that idea. Yeah.
We had the super original idea to start a podcast during COVID. So.
You're welcome. Anyway, this is Humboldt Holding Up. My name is Andrew Goff.
I'm Stephanie McGarry. Thank you so much for lending us your ears.
And if you are a person in Humboldt County who enjoys the live music, the live performance, over the years, I assume that you have found yourself in the wonderful, intimate Arcata Playhouse, which, like all performing venues, has had to
adjust.
But the Arcata Playhouse, they do lots of other stuff, lots of creative projects in the community, which is why we wanted to see what the brains behind the operation, some of them at least, were up to these days. We reached out to the executive director, Jackie Dandenu, who was kind enough to join us in the Zoom. Jackie.
Yes.
I'm back. Right.
Jackie Dandenu, executive director of the Arcata Playhouse and all-around entertaining person. We want to thank you for appearing in pixel form in front of our eyes.
You're welcome.
Now, I've seen you perform a lot over the years, and nice. I can't imagine that sheltering in place is a preferable reality for an extrovert like yourself.
Well, it's not so bad, actually. I have a nice place that I live. You know, I've been working a lot, and I have a staff still. And quite frankly, I haven't really performed much for the last year. I've kind of been busy running things.
Yeah.
So I haven't been doing a lot of performing. But it's been good for my extroverted heart to sort of be a bit more of an introvert and, you know, slow down a bit. Been reading a lot of poetry, writing some poetry, doing some more writing.
I was going to say, like, as an artist, you must be thinking and about creating something, some work in response to everything that is currently punching us in the face.
For sure. I mean, we have, we have a thing coming up on the 17th of October called Intersections Where We Meet. And so we've kind of been working on that. It's about, racial equity, social justice, environmental justice. So that's a good thing. We tried to do it live, but got turned down by the county. So that was hard, but, you know, we get it. So we're doing it on a new platform called On Stage. So we're trying that platform out.
Oh, wow.
See what happens with it.
So is that a digital thing, I assume?
Or? It's a digital thing, yeah. So Haley, our marketing person, and Mackenzie, and our intern from HSU, Stephanie. Meta, we have another intern. She's been working on both a Patreon or patron. I'm not sure. I call it patron. Everybody else calls it Patreon. I'm like,
yeah.
So they've been working on these platforms on how we can deliver this program in a way that's not so, you know, Zoom floating in space, like we're in a black background right now, and, you know, how it can be a little more tied to something. And there's lots of platforms out there that do digital conferences. And so we're looking at it, trying it out.
Wow.
Yeah. Hard.
You
it's not really my medium.
Sure. You mentioned being, you know, frustrated about not being able to, perform in the way you like. I imagine you're champing at the bit to get the Playhouse up and back to entertaining people. And the question obviously is, how do we do that safely? Mm-hmm. And something I've seen bubbling up on Humboldt social medias in the last week or so, I saw you posted about this. I think Leslie Castellano is a part of this effort. Y'all are exploring this idea of pushing the state to produce guidelines for performers, rules that you can all agree on, so that we can get back to enjoying the performing arts again. Like, what are your thoughts on this? How do we do that?
Oh, a very good question, Mr. Goff. Well, because I believe that the arts are an essential service, that, you know, our souls and our psyches and what the arts do for us as a community and how we can use them in this time to build and create a new paradigm is really, really important. I also know that COVID is devastating, and especially devastating to a lot of populations that that we serve. So I'm not pushing for so hard for indoor theater myself. I'm looking at fall of 2021 as where I'm starting to tentatively book things. I'm not booking anything in the theater before that. But I feel like outdoor events using COVID rules and things that go beyond that are performative events are really, really important. The other question is for indoor events, how do we do it safely? And it's hard because you don't want to say, well, they get to do it, how come I don't get to do it? Because I want them to do it. It's not like I want everybody not to do it, right? So it's like this sticky wicket of saying, yes, how come the restaurants can open, but we can't open? Or how come a church can open and have a guitar player, but I can't? But it's like, of course I want, you know, the church to be able to open and have a guitar player. But how do we sort of look at it as a larger picture rather than sort of, you know, religion, economy, art? How do we look at it holistically so that we can all have protocols that apply to all of us? Not that as soon as I say I'm applying for something as the Playhouse, we're like, you're in stage four, you're out. We're not even going to look at you. You know, I see us as the second wave of essential service, you know.
Something my mind goes to, and like especially too at the Outpost, you know, like just the fact that we're doing this as a thing that, you know, a podcast for Loco is, you know, kind of a response to COVID. And I think, you know, I can't remember what the exact wording of the adage, like art works and thrives in its constraints, or what on the Daily just talking about how this theater group, and I want to say it was around the New York area, they staged Jesus Christ Superstar, but they did it, you know, they wanted to stage it in a way that was completely COVID safe and responsible. So like they, you know, they reblocked all of the, you know, it's like none of the actors touch in the play. They had to come up with creative ways to, you know, signify when an embrace was coming on, or they never touched the same prop twice. And it's like, I don't know. Do you think along those lines of like, okay, this is exciting. I have to push myself to come up with something that is going to be specific for this time and place.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things we were really excited about Intersections, is we had this whole COVID plan that it was a progressive theater piece, that we would have groups of 10 people, and we bought these umbrellas that were clear, so that each, you know, you could have a pod of two people under one umbrella, and you would have to be masked, and we would have docents that would lead people progressively through this piece that would take place in the Creamery District. Nice. And, you know, it was really exciting, and people would be, the performers would be, you know, 15 feet away, or maybe up on the staircase in the Creamery building, or, you know, so it was all really socially distanced, and the audience was in a really controlled 10 people per pod or per audience, and we do 8 of them, so we get 80 people through, so you could have 15 minutes, the 10 people arrive, they get their umbrellas, they go through, then the next reserved group arrives, and we were trying to get away also environmentally from drive-in stuff, so that we didn't have to have people with cars going through, that it could be, you know, pedestrians and families. And we sort of looked at all these COVID things and were really excited about the possibility of people seeing something performed from a distance even, and that artists would have performing artists would have a chance to do that. But it was turned down, so it was really disappointing, and it kind of took the wind out of my sails, but not the staff.
How is that, I mean, I feel like I see, you know, other people, maybe it's not, you know, here locally, but just in general, people are, you know, doing stuff like that, doing, you know, why is that specifically something you have to apply for approval for versus like, I don't know, people just being outdoor?
Well, I think as soon as you're an organization,
yeah,
you have to apply for approval. I mean, if I were just a renegade artist group, I could probably get away with something. but you know, I'm the local arts agency for the city of Arcata, so my ability to get away with stuff kind of goes down a bit.
Also,
I feel like in a way it's my responsibility to model behavior in a way. Sure. Not that I'm like the paragon of whatever, but you know, I believe in the masks and social distancing and not having large groups, and that it's a time for us to not go out as much, of not, you know, not eat in restaurants as much, and, you know, and really check ourselves of what we're doing. So I do believe in that. And I don't really want to have like a party with 50 people, and I'm not chomping at the bit to open the Playhouse, you know, because my audience is in the target, you know, I'm not going to get a lot of the people. I don't do, you know, big dance party shows where I'm going to get, you know, younger people who are maybe more willing to take the risk, or whatever that is. So it's not in my best interest in a way to do all that work to produce an event that's not going to produce the people. And and also to work creatively to see, you know, like we're going to do our Christmas show as a radio play. And so it's pushed us to get Humboldt Hot Air up and going and get some, you know, things going there and get our studio together there so that we can really do this radio play and put it out on Humboldt Hot Air and, you know, get all those licenses in place. So it's really sort of pushed that studio forward, which is great.
What is Humboldt Hot Air?
What is Humboldt Hot Air? It's
people need to know.
It's a studio that we, a little audio studio that we put in. Access Humboldt helped us put it in. And so it's in our storeroom in the Playhouse, and it was like one little corner, and it was not soundproof, and it was fine. But it was a start out the gate. So now we've expanded the space that Humboldt Hot Air can be in, and we're going to soundproof the recording studio and then make two editing stations in Humboldt Hot Air. And Narrowly Devaney, Vinnie Devaney's daughter, she's back in town, and she did some radio studies at Santa Cruz and had a radio program there called Queen Beats. And so she's really involved in that. Danielle Orr from KHSU has been running it and managing it. So we have some KHSU people involved in it as well. So we're trying to set up this audio studio in Arcata. You know, my goal was eventually to actually have a lo-fi radio that could be in Arcata, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Right now, we're looking heavily towards online and how we can make that website so that you could store podcasts there. We're working with the Native American Studies Department at HSU to do some podcasts, some high school stuff. So that's Humboldt Hot Air. So looking at that, that's like, this is the time to really lay our groundwork so that when 2021 hits, we're like, we're ready to go. You know, we have all these things that we've worked on and we're set up. We're also doing a thing called Zoom Around the World for part of our family series. So we've got artists from India, Scotland, Canada, Sri Lanka, Chicago, local, doing these little 30-minute storytelling sessions. So it'll be live, like Lindsay Battle's doing one. So she'll be in the theater. We'll film her. We're going to set up our little set on the theater and we'll film her from there. And then everybody else will Zoom in. Oh, we have Mexico too. We have people from Mexico City who are phoning in for Hispanic Heritage Month. So, you know, things like that are exciting and cool, and how you can kind of keep the live thing going and give some money to performers. You know, some performers are like, wow, that's the most money I've been paid all year, you know, because they're not doing anything. So it's like I have resources right now that I can start, you know, that I can give out to artists.
Yeah. So, well, it occurs to me as you're talking about some of this stuff that maybe some of our listeners don't, you know exactly what the Arcata Playhouse is, because you are more than just a playhouse. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, you're the local arts agency, but I'm sure a lot of people don't know what that means. So maybe you could explain a little bit about like what is the Arcata Playhouse, Jackie?
What is the Arcata Playhouse? It's funny. I mean, I can't go into the arts agency so much because I'm just in the process of solidifying it all with the city. We've been the local arts agency since 2010 when we got the money to sort of redevelop the Creamery District. So in 2010, I got a national endowment Endowment for the Arts grant. And that kind of kick-started creative placemaking in the Creamery District, which, you know, my, you know, here comes my soapbox, out it comes, you know, that I believe the arts are an essential element of both the economy and society. So they both create and secure jobs. They allow people to feel the pride of place. They, you know, engender innovation. They make people want to move here because our schools have arts in them and they have innovative thinking. And they make people want to move here because they can both go for a hike and go see exciting things. And, you know, all the job retention and attraction. But mostly how we as a society, how the arts can really help us communicate and problem solve and work together. I mean, that's been the ancient role of the arts forever. We come from this long line of artists who are employed to address social issues. To go on a saying again, Andrew, it's like, if you want to kill a revolution, kill the artists. Because that's, it's so prevalent in everything that we do.
Don't tip your hand like that, Jackie. They
I know.
Time to be putting that out there.
They'll never find me. They'll never find me. So anyways, the local arts agency. So we've been the local arts agency and we've been really Creamery District focused because, you know, because we're small, because we don't have a big staff. So I couldn't we couldn't apply things to everywhere. So the goal for me became, how do I use the local arts agency citywide, not Creamery District centric? So I'm working with Fawn Shear and the city of Arcata to develop some really, I call them robust, because that's the words that I've learned, the robust guidelines on what a local arts agency can do within the city. So Shoshana is now the head of the Creamery District. So if you have any Creamery District questions, you talk to Shoshana. She's spearheading that now. And I'm looking more at how I support what I'm calling building blocks throughout the city of Arcata, Bayside, Westwood Center, Gentoli Lane, and how we can look beyond, you know, supporting the plaza and the Creamery, but look to other areas of the city to really use the arts to for creative placemaking.
Yes. Actually, yes. The last time I talked to you for an article that I interviewed you was back in March. It was right before Shelter in Place happened. And we were talking about you guys, about Arcata's strategic arts plan and about the Playhouse expanding some efforts. And then you had a couple of events coming up, which were, of course, canceled because then everything was canceled. And I hadn't even realized this until I was looking back, you know, preparing for this interview. And I went, wow, that was like the last thing I wrote about, I think, right before Shelter in Place. Mm-hmm. And I know you were talking a lot about expanding some efforts to Valley West, too, which is kind of, a lot of people half jokingly call that like Arcata's ugly stepchild, or
exactly the redheaded stepchild,
the forgotten neighborhood of Arcata.
Oh, sorry, Andrew.
Hey, we're
that sister. So, you know.
So a lot of people refer to it as the Andrew Goff of Arcata. and what can we do with this neighborhood? And I was wondering about, you know, what efforts you've still been making there, and also just about the strategic arts plan, you know, and if that's still been going on.
Yeah, it's still a thing. The strategic arts plan is a thing, and we're getting closer and closer to aligning the Playhouse Arts bylaws and what our board is up to with the strategic arts plan, so that we can present something to City Council, hopefully within, I'm not even going to say, hopefully in a time.
That's a good
time frame that will happen.
Probably smart these days.
I mean, my goal is before Christmas, but my goal has been before Christmas for quite some time. So, but it's making definite progress. And the city of Arcata, we are working really closely with the city of Arcata to develop the strategic arts plan. Also, you know, to talk about public art versus protest art, to talk about funding, to talk about all kinds of things, joint granting, communication guidelines for public art, how artists, you know, how we could use the arts agency to facilitate an easier system for getting public art to happen, all those kind of things. So it's exciting. It's an exciting, you know, we're really close to releasing it. And so then it'll become apparent when we do that, what the difference between the Playhouse Arts and the Arcata Playhouse right now, you know, we're the same thing. So it's like the local arts agency runs a venue, which is the Arcata Playhouse right now. Mm-hmm. And the structure is set up so that there could be more venues that the local arts agency runs, like Seattle, you know, their local arts agency. We're going to be just like Seattle. Their local arts agency gets 1% of, you know, the general fund to run venues, to run their public arts programs. And they run, you know, 5 or 6 venues, and they have a really robust public arts program, as you probably know, one of the first in the country to really allocate funds in the 70s. They made this decision to allocate arts funds. And that's some of what you see in Seattle now, is that work that they did to really say, this is important. And then to work with, you know, looking at Portland and a group called City Repair and what they've done in terms of public art and redefining cityscapes away from a Roman grid to a more inclusive, you know, circular, like they did this thing where they took a block of houses and they took out the back alley, and the houses got rid of their fences, and they made a park and a community center in the middle so that the fire could, you know, fire trucks could still access, but it became less of a division between this is my property and this is your property, and how that worked for that block of houses. So that it's that kind of stuff that City Repair does. They also, you know, make protocols for people to be able to put, you know, like the mandala that's in this, in the Creamery District, to do that in their local community where they live. So like in, you know, in Sunset, you know, they have those roundabouts, how you make it so that it's not cost prohibitive for local people to be able to put a mandala in their little intersection in their community where they live, so that you can look at beautification and pride of place both as a city and as a microcosm within, you know, a block radius.
Yeah. So have you been able to do it, those kinds of things yet? Or do you have anything planned specifically for Valley West coming up? Or
I think today we have an art gallery, pop-up art gallery in Valley West in the Rays parking lot. We got these gallery walls from Scrap Humboldt, and we painted them and lit them so it looks like a little gallery. And we have them on a flatbed trailer, and we'll drive to Valley West and set them up and have a gallery attendant at the thing. And we have paintings that people can buy from local artists there on the walls. And so we're doing this pop-up gallery thing.
That's so cool. Yeah,
Valley West.
You told me a little bit, so you don't even know this is how secret it is, because you were telling me a little bit about this.
They're going to tell me where to drive the truck to.
I was so curious. I'm glad you brought this up, because you had mentioned something about this project, this sort of art gallery pop-up thing you guys were doing, and it sounded really mysterious and secret and weird, and I was wondering what details you can share with us about this.
We don't want to say that we're promoting an audience, because then that requires us to get a permit. But what we're doing is we're filming it, that it will be part of the event on the 17th, Intersections Where We Meet. So what we're trying to do is put things in places where people might not expect them. So you know, a formal art gallery in the Rays parking lot.
That's definitely not the, probably I would know. If you said, where is the last place I expect to see an art gallery? That might be right at the top of my list. The Rays.
And then we have you know, as part of Intersections, we have, you know, dancers in the forest. We have, you know, things on the beach. We have John Chernoff and Terry Bond from the Eureka Symphony in a back alley. You know, we have sort of trying to juxtapose these things that says art, you know, where does it belong? Especially right now, where does performing arts belong? And where we meet on those, both where does it belong physically, and then where does it belong racially, and then where does it belong within our environment? It's the intersections where we meet, and where that real dialogue can happen. or not. I mean, you know, when the waves crash, that creates a dialogue as well. So just looking at that, it's been really interesting right now too, how all these, you know, how everything is meeting.
Yeah.
Trump's got COVID.
Yes, we we heard about
intersections.
Yeah.
I don't want to smile when I say that.
Yeah.
What's this Wonder Wagon?
The Wonder Wagon, all of our workshops got canceled this summer. You know, we tried to do one and then it was just like, let's just can it. And how can we bring things to families and kids who can't go to workshops, who aren't, you know, who are home, who need things to do. So we put together the Wonder Wagon and then Haley and Mackenzie painted it. So it's like, you know, it's our Wells cargo trailer that we've had forever. And they painted it up and called it the Wonder Wagon. And then we took it around to locations in Humboldt and distributed art packages. We did gymnastic ribbons, you know, those little ribbons where gymnasts do the thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they're called suddenly. Ribbons on sticks. So
they're called ribbons on sticks.
They're called ribbon sticks. So we did ribbons on sticks. We did masks. We had two levels of masks for younger kids and for older kids. And they would show up and we'd give them a ribbon stick and we'd give them a package for a mask, which had instructions in English and Spanish. And then we had videos that kids could go and watch. And Haley Davis did these great videos for kids. So we would, you know, they would come and get them. And then we did them again with Shoshana. She joined us. And we did ribbon sticks and she did kites. So she put together kite packages. So now we have ribbon sticks, kites, and masks. And we still have them in the Wonder Wagon. And so we're talking about using them for our Artists in Schools program right now. That we might just, there's a possibility that the Wonder Wagon might show up at schools to distribute some of the packages. But we're also doing artists in schools. We have artists, Haley Davis and Sarah McKinney are, you know, Sarah's our education director, and they're putting together a program for artists in schools. And we're working that program together with, geez, it sounds like we're really busy. I guess we are.
Yeah.
We're putting that program together with a sculpture that we've been working on for about the last 2 years. That's part of a program called Keep the Giant Jolly, which is about the Jolly Giant Creek and how we draw attention to Jolly Giant Creek and the restoration of Jolly Giant Creek so that eventually we could get salmon coming up Jolly Giant Creek again. We built these two sculptures. James Hildebrandt, a local artist, built these two sculptures, which will be featured on Keat TV in April. But he built these two sculptures that will be in on 8th and 9th Street. And then they'll point towards Jolly Giant Creek. And then Haley and James and Jack Murphy have developed a curriculum with kids where they'll learn about things that live in the creek. And then the kids will get these plywood panels that then they will draw their creatures on and paint them. And we will cut them out and weatherize them and put them up in the Creamery District so that there will be this whole vision towards Jolly Giant Creek. And then there's some street painting things that go on too, that the idea is that eventually this installation could actually go throughout the whole city so that you could see the progress of Jolly Giant Creek throughout the city of Arcata, that it goes, you know, under the co-op, comes out and ends up by like Pacific Outfitters. And so we've been working with Mad River Alliance and Jack Murphy from HSU, James Hildebrandt. One of our employees, Eli Baum, worked on it before he left. He went back to Berkeley. And an HSU intern worked on it as well. So that thing's all coming to fruition. And it might be up by, you know, it will be up. No, probably, I want to say mid-November. I'm going to point. So that's exciting. That's an exciting thing that is connecting kids and schools and art and artists and
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you already kind of deferred to Shoshana on this, but I wanted to ask you kind of a status update on this dream of the Creamery District.
Right.
You know, obviously the Arcata Playhouse is one of several local entities located inside the Creamery building on 9th Street. You got Redwood Rocks and the pub in there. And over the past few years, there's been this push to make the Creamery district a thing, you know, a destination, mm-hmm. another place in Arcata you associate with fun and art and social activity. You've got a couple annual festivals you do there in non-pandemic mm-hmm. times. I guess locking down the resources and the people to do something like this is always the obstacle. But if you could, you know, you're a creative person, Shoshana, obviously a lot of energy there. What would you turn the Creamery district into if someone, say, dropped $10 million in your lap? You're just like, if you could just make that as colorful and amazing as you could even possibly conceive, mm-hmm. what would the Creamery district be?
Well, I think the center of the Creamery district is the Creamery building, and it could use $10 million. It could use $10 million to be, you know, fire safe. Not that it's not right now. It is fire safe, but to restore that building as a historic building, to get solar power in there, to you know, Brian and Lisa have had the vision of the Creamery building being an arts thing since they bought the building in the 70s. And so their vision is really solid on what that is and the work that they've done to make it affordable for artists to be there. You know, they subsidize the Playhouse. Without Brian and Lisa, it would be difficult to keep the doors open on the Playhouse. So they subsidize by keeping rents low. And the work that they've done, like the work they did in the pub, and now there's, you know, there's a lot of people in that little alleyway going into Redwood yeah. Rocks. There's My Kin Studios, there's Sea Pod, there's Bang Bang, there's two other podders in there now. There's the Good Collective, there's a photo studio upstairs, there's, you know, a VRBO that's awesome. And their vision for the building, I think, is worthy of that $10 million support because it really is the centerpiece, the anchor of the Creamery District that then allows Holiashi, that they have their store there and that it, you know, right. succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. I think it's supporting the people to keep the events going and supporting that building.
Yeah, I just pulled the number 10 million out of my ass and you're running with it. I was like,
let's go with it. I'm 10 million would be the minimum, I'm telling you.
I
think that there could be such group. I mean, and looking at you know, the whole field over there by the old Tomas building that is now Open Door, on how mm-hmm. you could build, you know, artists not only studios but studio live space, so that you could have not only the single artist that can live in a one-room apartment with a studio, but you could have artist families, that you could support artists who have families to live in a place that is creative and safe and accommodates, you know, a family of four living together with an artist studio, and how we look at, you know, artist housing, because we tend to look towards visual artists, and that visual artists need a visual artist studio and then a place to sell their art, when in fact, I feel like we don't need a place for artists to sell their work, that we don't need to put that pressure on an artist to actually sell their work, but we need to have a space that embraces the artist's sensibility, that allows the artist to create, that then perhaps, you know, co-ops, artist co-ops like the one on the plaza, and independent businesses can then sell those artists' work. But the artist's job is to have a space that they can create. So those are my things, and how you could, you know, mobilize visual arts and happenings and sort of put that in your purview of what is public art. That public art is, of course, sculpture and mural, but it's also happenings that change your kinesthetic response to space, so that the next time you walk by that field, you say, oh, remember when that circus tent was there? That was so cool. So that's like altering how you look at it. And I think that's as important as a mural and a sculpture.
And I have to say, your efforts with the Creamery District, it's been amazing to see how successful they have been, because even the fact that we refer to it as the Creamery District now, mm-hmm. yeah, that has to do with what you guys have done there, because, you know, when I was growing up, that was not a thing. We didn't call that the Creamery District, but now mm-hmm. it's a part of my vocabulary as if it always had been. And so that's exactly the kind of thing that you're you know, trying to do there is have the people associate this whole neighborhood, this whole area with being a vibrant place where they want to live. And it's clearly true. It's like now people want to live in the Creamery district when you did not used to want to live over there or even call it the Creamery district.
No.
Yeah.
Like the days when Lila Nelson got her guitar and all her money stolen out of her car. Those were great days.
Oh man. but
the other thing about that is the whole thing about creative placemaking is then you have to look at gentrification and what that means. So that for me to look at how you empower the artist to be involved in economic development, and you empower the economic development people to employ the artist, right. So that you're not getting to a point. And I'm going to point to Boulder, but I don't really know all the details about Boulder, Colorado. But when it was like this hippie, not hippie, but like an artist town that the artist mm-hmm. built, and then it became too expensive for the artist to live there. That's right. A pattern. Right. That's a pattern that happens. And like how do we...
The artists spruce up the town and then make it nice. And then it's like, oh, well, now...
Now you have to move somewhere else because you can't afford to live there.
I don't know. Maybe that's a pattern. Then they migrate to another.
Maybe it is a good pattern. Yeah.
Well, it makes it unaffordable for some other folks too, who maybe already live in the neighborhood. Right.
Artists are not the only poor.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
And artists aren't always poor. That's the thing too, that we have to get out of that mentality that artists are always poor and it's, you know, Van Gogh living in the garret, cutting off his ear, and you know, there's torture and pain and poverty involved in the arts.
Right.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was gentrification was a very difficult thing in the Creamery district. Of people who had lived there for a long time suddenly were seeing changes that they didn't love. And how do you hear that voice as well and say, yeah, I think it's important that we keep some of the funk of the Creamery district, that we don't go all slick and purple, you know, that we don't like put sidewalks in there and, you know, do all this stuff, that it evolves organically and that we manage to maintain the heart of what is groovy about the Creamery district,
right?
Which is that it, you know, it's a patchwork, not a... So that's the flip side of the $10 million, right?
we're gonna get you this $10 million.
get Brian and Lisa that $10 million because they'll like do groovy shit with it. You can give it to me too. I mean, I'm fine.
You're not going to say no to that?
No, I'm not going to say no to it. And I think that, you know, I would work with Brian and Lisa quite heavily to look at the visions because they're such amazing woodworkers and... You know, the visions that they have on space and how you use space. I mean, their artistry is, I always find it like stunning. Like what they did with Tosha Yoga, the Tosha Yoga space, how they worked with Suzanne to create that space. I don't know if you've ever been in it, but it's really a lovely space. And the apartment, the photo studio that they did and the apartment up above, it's just like they have this really groovy, groovy aesthetic that I think needs to, you know, they work so hard too. And it's just like, oh, someone, you know, I want them to retire and then tell people what the aesthetic is and how it should be done. And then they pay people to do it. And then they come in and say, no, not like that. Yeah. But that they're like, you know, smoking cigars in the chair, telling people how to do it. And that their legacy can live on because they're, you know, they're really great.
Well, you know, you were talking about already a bit of, you know, how you guys have been how the Playhouse has been adjusting to the changes and trying these different virtual platforms. And you know, Andrew was mentioning that in the Creamery district there usually are some festivals. And then, you know, in February, you've usually been doing the O2F, the Zero to Fears Festival. Mm-hmm. I actually should mention when Jackie was saying, you know, a humbled intern and looking at me, I should mention that I think 3 years ago when I was still an HSU student for my public relations class, I did an internship with the Arcata Playhouse. Mm-hmm. So just full disclosure there. And I helped with Mark.
Not that,
I did. I helped.
question.
I helped with marketing for this festival, or tried to anyway.
You did a good job.
Intern. Well, thank you.
I wrote you a nice thing for your professor.
Yes, you did. So thank you for helping me to graduate college and then be here today and now interviewing you. Amazing. Full circle. Anyway, but yeah, so, you know, you do this usually week-long festival with a variety of different events in February. I mean, are you already, are you thinking you're still going to do that this year or any of these other events? Are you already looking into ways to adapt this to the COVID era? Or
the exciting thing about the O2F festival, it takes place around March 8th, International Women's Day. So this year it will start on International Women's Day because the Social Justice Summit will lead up to the International Women's Day, the Social Justice Summit at HSU. Okay. So the exciting thing about it is I feel like we have a greater possibility for getting speakers, getting people to come and speak because we don't have to get them up here, which takes 4 days of their week to come up. So, you know, I'm pushing for Angel Kyoto Williams to come and do a talk on women in activism. You know, why not shoot big? Sure, she's not busy at all. but all, you know, just looking at different ways that we can use this time in the digital world to really look at that platform and also look at how it could be that platform, but also local outdoor things that can happen. So those, that's, it's definitely happening still. The crazy thing is, I'm going to diss Brown Paper Tickets right here in
this
podcast. We did all of our tickets for the Zero to Fierce Festival through Brown Paper Tickets. Mm-hmm. And they basically emailed us and said, sorry, we can't pay you.
Oh.
So that's it. They're not paying us. They paid out Coachella. They paid out all of those producers. They paid out all of that stuff. But us little people, they're just not paying us.
Wait, I don't understand that.
Yeah, like, I know exactly. So we've taken it to the Attorney General or whatever with the state of Washington, because that's where they're based. And
wait, nobody can do anything. Brown Paper Tickets, you did your ticketing through Brown Paper Tickets. So all the money that you got from the festival, people bought the tickets on Brown Paper Tickets.
Yeah.
And then
Brown Paper Tickets took their money.
And then when you go to collect the money, they said like, nah.
Sorry.
How because can that, what?
We don't have that money.
Because it was
that
just
money,
after
we can't pay
COVID.
That money.
Because they're—
No, just that they, because they had so many events canceled.
Right.
And they had to give all that money back, that all of us who had, you know, smaller people who had already, you know, everybody had already paid their money and gone and done the event, and then I'd get the check. They're like, no, we can't do that.
I mean, they must
That's
you should look at that story and see how many people locally got affected.
No kidding. Yeah. This is the first time that I have heard about this, and I'm very surprised.
There are other local people, and yet they're still doing events. Now they've started doing events again, and, you know, people are buying tickets.
Yeah, look at this. I just Googled it up. Washington State Attorney General has sued a Seattle-based virtual box office company alleging Brown Paper Tickets owes nearly $7 million to artists and ticket buyers.
Wow.
That's
us. We're in that pile.
Wow.
So
I can't
was like devastating because I was a big Brown Paper Tickets fan.
Right.
I used them for 12 years. You know, it was devastating. It was like, God, on top of everything, you're not going to pay me?
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at where we can do our tickets. I mean, I think it would be great to have an artists driven ticketing thing where that money can then go back into local arts.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's cool to hear that you're also, you know, taking advantage of these, of the digital platforms to kind of, you know, have some different goals. And it's been very cool to see that be a sort of silver lining of the COVID thing and seeing how, you know, there are some ways that it is, that doing things digitally is better. Yeah. You know, you can have people don't have to travel, and in some ways it encourages more involvement. So kind of
like our Zoom Around the World thing is going to be really cool. We're doing this storytelling session at 11 o'clock on Fridays from October 9th to Christmas Day. And we have, you know, people from India and Sri Lanka and Scotland and Canada, and they're going to be live. So you're going to, you know, be in India and, you know, Tushar can say, this is where I live, and this is, I'm here in Bangalore, and
Yeah. And is that a free thing or is that
it is free.
People? Cool.
Yeah. It starts next Thursday, actually, with Latinx. Mostly it's for Humboldt County schools is where we've marketed it thus far. But we're going to record the sessions and then they'll be available for people through our website with a little, you know, donation tip jar thing.
Right.
Where people can drop money in. Thousands right. and thousands of dollars. But it's exciting. I mean,
$10 million dollars for
yeah, Allison.
Some Allison anonymous Russell. Millionaire.
That's right.
Oh. Cool.
Was there anything, I mean, we went through all the things that we thought we needed to ask you about, but is there anything else that you, you know, COVID related or not, that you feel like you want to put out there to Humboldt? Did you want to talk presidential politics? I know you...
I can't vote, so I don't want to talk.
That's right, because you are Canadian, right?
I'm an immigrant, yeah.
Why are you
and
here?
I can't vote.
Why are you here?
So everybody needs to vote, because as soon as you can't vote, you realize... Yeah. The privilege of being able to vote.
Jack, I mean, honestly, being that you have that option to maybe escape to the Great White North, or has it crossed your mind when you all the chaos coming going on around?
It's crossed my mind that I'll be booted out, but not crossed my mind that I'll be. No, I feel like this is my community. This is where I live. Yeah. This is where my heart is. This is where my work is. This is where my love is. This is where my family is. And I really feel connected to Humboldt County. I am still confused by things in the United States of America, like healthcare still confuses me. Like every year I have to like figure out the healthcare exchange and I'm like, oh, why is this so hard? Or yeah. Hearing, you know, healthcare stories, but no, this is where I live. This is where I am. So it puts, undocumented people and documented people and DACA and all of those things really close to my heart, because I say, yeah. I mean, I have the privilege of going back to Canada, and I have the privilege of coming and going. And what is that when you leave your country under not circumstances that are your choice, that are, you know, you're pushed to leave your country and then you arrive somewhere and your footing is unsteady where you have arrived. To me, it's like, yeah. It does come home to roost, and that we, the difficulty of not having a voice in your governing. For me, I'm on like the privileged end of that, not having a voice in your government, but it really helps me. It really drives empathy strongly in me that says, this is a tragedy. This is unconscionable that we live in a society that deems less, you know, or doesn't have empathy for people on all levels, from immigration to opioid to homelessness to, you know, all of those things. So, and that's where I feel the arts come in. We come in to look at that empathy, to say, these are homeless women. These are these women that are on the street. They're not these women over here. They are these women. You know that Tom Waits song, What Becomes of All the Little Boys Who Never Comb Their Hair? They're lined up all around the block on the nickel over there. So it's like, you know, we're all sprung from the same. And how do we use the arts, and how do we use our empathy to look at the environment, to look at people, to look at children, to look at fish, to look at small critters, to look at flies, to look at butterflies, to look at, you know, bright colors, to look at love, to look at human connection. Yeah. There's so much to look at.
Yeah.
Well, I say, you know, the Arcata Playhouse is a unique blessing to Humboldt. I know it's a part of the fabric of the community. And so I hope you don't get booted to back to Canada, because I think
you'll go on without me. I'd like to say that.
Well, we don't want you. I think you've been a blessing, and you've brought energy and creativity to Humboldt.
Yeah.
And I would be remiss not to mention David Fernie, because yeah. David really, you know, he was the booking guy, and as the founder, you know, what we created with the Playhouse, his heart is hugely a part of that, even though he's not, you know, the huge part of it right now. Physically, his, you know, the work that he did to really build that reputation among artists, and his vision for, you know, how to treat artists is a huge part of the Playhouse. So yeah. I want to get that in there.
Definitely. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us, Jackie. We really appreciate you taking time out of your still busy, even in COVID, schedule, and just for chatting with us about all of this.
Thanks for reminding me what's important.
Right. Well, thank you so much to Jacqueline Dandenault, for joining us. And also thank you so much to our sponsor, Los Bagels.
Yeah.
And we just want to mention, if you would like to sponsor Humboldt Holding Up, all you have to do is shoot an email to advertise@lostcoastoutpost.com.
Also, allegedly, Humboldt Holding Up is on iTunes. Not allegedly, it's true. I can confirm this is happening. Yeah. So if you wanted to go subscribe to that, you will get it in your little podcast feed. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but it is an option open to you. And I, as always, would like to take this opportunity to remind you to wear a mask, because if anything has become apparent in the last few days, anybody can get COVID-19.
Make sure that you are registered to vote, as Jackie was pointing out. Exercise that right.
Yeah.
And
because Jackie cannot.
Exactly. And thank you for listening, Humboldt.
Have a good one.